Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Mud Toe at Midnight. I am your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. I have played my flute and I have offered sacred fire in the four directions. Please join me in sacred ceremony. I speak as spirit moves me to speak, and I invite you to do the same by calling me at 646-595-3440. And now, Mud Toe at Midnight.
I really need to take that phone number out of there, because I don't even have the switchboard up right now. I could probably have it up if I got the gumption to fire up the MacBook. I just never think about it until I'm about ready to go on the air, because I know I can get on the air, and that's all that's important to me. So if you are on hold right now, I'm sorry, I actually cannot answer your call. I'm not, I don't have the equipment necessary to do so. And I guess I really ought to take that phone number out of the little introduction there if I'm not going to be able to answer the phone, right? But I also sort of lack technical tools that are required to do that. They may be on this new laptop, they may not, I really haven't looked yet. Something else to put on my list of things to do. Good evening. My name is Mud Toe. I am your host for this program, which is entitled Mud Toe at Midnight, in which I speak to you for 30 minutes as spirit moves me to speak. Hope you enjoy the show. I also hope you will write me at mudtoesasquatch@gmail.com. That's MudtoeSasquatch. If you liked it, if you didn't like it, meaning the show, go ahead and write me there. You can also leave me a message on my Facebook page, which is Mud Toe Sasquatch. You can also see on the Facebook page some of my writings. My blog appears there. My blog also appears on my website, which is mudtoesasquatch.com. So I'd love for you to check me out in any of those places and let me know what you think, because it's difficult to work in a vacuum. I mean, I will. I'm more than happy to work in a vacuum. I'm more than happy to work with a vacuum. But with your input, the show, I think, becomes quite a bit better. And the writing becomes quite a bit better. And I would like both the show and the writing to be quite a bit better. So, there's that. I'm happy you've joined me tonight on withinsightsradio.com. Actually, the withinsightsradio.com channel of blocktalkradio.com. If you tune into this very same channel on other days, you will hear different programs. Monday at 6 o'clock is Chief Iggy's show, where he and a cast of favorites do psychic readings for your edification and listening pleasure. Tuesday at 11:30 a.m. is Lunchtime Wisdom, which is Chief Iggy and a different set of favorites discussing the issues of the day. And on Fridays, we have Mark the Rabbit Hole, an interesting new show with our new friend Mark Matheny, who is an astrologer and has many strong opinions on the issues of the day. So it's never a dull moment tuning into his show. So I suggest you do that. And that's, what time is it? I think it's 11 a.m. on Fridays. And then I'm here at midnight on Friday or Saturday, depending on how you look at it. If you think midnight belongs to the day before it, then it's Friday. If you think midnight belongs to the morning after it, it's Saturday. Blog Talk thinks Monday that the midnight belongs to the morning after it, because on all the notifications you might get from Blog Talk, if you were to set it to remind you of my show, it says Saturday morning, and people are often confused by that. I think of it as Friday evening, because of something I saw in a cheap movie. I think I've told this story on the air before, but some of you may not have heard it. Scott Valentine, I believe, is the gentleman's name, and he played Mallory's boyfriend on the old TV show Family Ties. And in this movie, he played a vampire And he said at one point in the movie, he said, the night belongs to the day it follows. So in other words, it's still the same day. Do I really want to explain exactly why he said that? I don't know. Why don't I'm feeling moved to explain it, so why don't I go ahead and do it? He's through the whole movie running around with this young lady, and he intends to attack her, but he's letting her have this last night before he dispatches her. And she has a small child, a young boy, who lives with his father, who won't let the woman see him. And so the vampire facilitates her stealthy entry into the house. And it was his birthday, that's what it was. It was the kid's birthday, and she had missed the birthday. And Vampire Scott Valentine says, no, you didn't, because, you know, even though it's 3 a.m, it's still the night follows. The night belongs to the day it follows, so it's still his birthday. And I thought that was a rather sweet way to think of it, and a logical way to think of it. I don't know why the day should change, you know, in the middle of the night. I mean, practically, probably because nobody has to deal with the change, or at least almost nobody has to deal with the change from night to day if you put it at a time when everybody's asleep. So anyway, there's that story. The name of the picture, if you should happen to want to find it on Netflix or something, is To Sleep with a Vampire. And it has certain features of interest. It won some awards, not Oscars or anything, but, you know, vampire movie type awards. I enjoyed it, but I haven't seen it for many years. It just doesn't seem to pop up. In fact, I'm trying to remember where I think my second wife introduced me to it. So there's another thing I can put on the list. I'm trying to think of positive things about the women I was married to. My therapist keeps wanting me to do that. So there's one. I'll have to remember that. I put it in my notebook. She introduced me to that movie I liked with Mallory's boyfriend from Family Ties, who's a vampire. And what's also coming back to me is the name Charlie Spradling, which was the woman's name. Not quite sure how that works, but there's another cool scene in it where he's trying to pick her brains about what it's like to be a human being and walk around in the day and stuff like that. So she takes him to the beach and gets one of those big security lights and shines it on him while he lays down in his underwear on the sand. And it's night, but they're shining this big heavy light on him, so you kind of get the flavor of it. He did a nice thing for her in letting her see her son, so she did a nice thing for him, trying to give him some inkling of what the sun was like. Interesting, I thought. So again, To Sleep with a Vampire is the name, and I was not paid to tell you about that. Just something that occurred to me, and not one of a number of things I was going to possibly speak about tonight, which is, of course, how it generally goes. What was I going to say? Now it's all gone out of my head. I never make notes. I probably should. I feel like the times I've made notes, what's happened is I go through all my notes, and then it's only 10 minutes into the show. I got 20 minutes left to try and figure something out. So things seem to go better, go more smoothly when I'm just kind of winging it. And I don't know how the majority of you might feel about that. But here I am. This was an issue last week, too, hearing my parents moving around in the hallway outside, and that's disconcerting. Because, I mean, they know that I talk out loud. I talk to myself. I'm talking to you. It's like a Piaget thing for kids. It's where they go through these stages, and one of these stages is where they're talking through everything. So they know what they're trying to do a task. They'll talk themselves through the task, or whatever it is they're doing. They're always constantly talking their way through it, and that's supposed to go away when the kids are about 10 years old. Well, with me, it never went away. I've always talked out loud, you know, for as long as I can remember. And of course, my folks know that about me, and they accept it. But it still embarrasses me when they walk in on me. You know, I'm sitting in a room watching television, just chattering away, and my mother will just walk in, you know, because the door's open. And I don't like hiding behind closed doors, although that's what I'm doing now because they're asleep and I want them to stay asleep. So, but I'm quite sure, I don't think my father can hear me. He doesn't hear very well, but I'm quite sure that my mother's awake right now. She can hear me from where she is. And I'm not sure that she, I think it's just, I would be disturbing her, just keeping her from being asleep. I don't think she's going to be particularly alarmed by anything I have to say. But she'll just be waiting for me to stop talking. Or maybe I'll hear her get up and she'll go out to the kitchen or something. Often I'm disturbed when I hear my parents moving around, just because it's so obvious from the way they move around how much older they are than they used to be. And that, of course, reminds me of how much older I am than I used to be. I want to say earth-shaking, but that's not really the word I want. And I've already said disconcerting, and I can't use that twice. You know, I come to the house, which is the same house I grew up in, to see my parents, and this little old man and little old lady live here now. And sometimes if I've been away for a while and I come back, and it's a little shocking because I have this certain picture of them in my mind that's of them when I was probably in my 20s is the picture of them that's most readily accessible to me. You know, I don't remember them when I was really young. And the pictures of them when I was more than a few years out of college just don't seem to have stuck. So I'm thinking of them, if I talk to them on the phone or whatever, I'm thinking of them as being about what they were 30 years ago. And then I see them, it's like, boy, they got old. They walk through radiation or something, I don't know. But that's the way of things, I guess. That's the natural process of decay. Things going back, you know, all the energy that goes into creating a living thing and maintaining it, I believe make it such that the living thing cannot endure because of entropy, that everything has to move from a state of order to a state of disorder, to a state of chaos. Living is a very ordered state. And as we consume energy to live, it takes something out of those very ordered DNA molecules and the cells and everything that's in there doing their thing to make us work. It just can't endure. Because you can't permanently keep taking in the energy that it takes to keep that machine running. It's like any machine. No machine runs forever. That light bulb in Boston is doing pretty well. I don't know if you've read about that, but one of those, a nice capitalist story. Thomas Edison was nothing if not a great promoter. And he got the world hooked on his light bulbs. But there was an alternative design. And there's one of them still, and I think I've got this right, I think it's in a firehouse in Boston. They put in one of these light bulbs, and it's still burning over 100 years later. And there's a picture of it, and on the internet you can see there's one of the cameras that shows you the light bulb that's still burning. I said, so, well, that might be pretty close to permanent. I guess there's turtles that live for 200 years as well. Maybe because turtles are kind of chill. You know, human beings are pretty interested in their lives and in moving around and in making things better for themselves, or on some occasion making things better for other people. But there's a lot of worry. a lot of abuse of yourself, either just in the course of everyday living and just not eating like you should, not taking care of yourself like you should, or actively abusing yourself, you know, too much double chocolate cake and so forth. Turtles, not interested in that sort of thing so much. They just kind of lay their eggs, and they're the ones, the sea turtles, I think they're the ones who I believe, the ones that live to be so old. Or maybe is that the Galapagos Island turtles are the ones that live so long. I don't know. But I'm thinking I have this image of the sea turtles, and, you know, they lay their eggs in the sand and then go back on the beach, and then the little turtles have to make their way to the water on their own, and it's supposed to be some sort of great life lesson, but I'm not quite sure what it's supposed to be, because, you know, then they get to the water and things eat them in the water too. Sounds about laying a lot of eggs or something. But it's you see it, if you're a kid, you've seen that movie, that National Geographic movie where the sea turtles lay their eggs, and then the little turtles are trying to make it, and they try to make all these metaphors, the National Geographic people do. And it's the cycle of life, or the circle of life, or the whatever of life, and the sea turtles. But the sea turtles, I don't know, if there's that sort of struggle, maybe they just get that struggle out. You know, when they're so young, they say, "Well, okay, I made it. Now I don't really have anything to worry about anymore. I can just be chill and live to be 200 years old." I've never met a sea turtle. Sorry, turtle. I can't speak tonight. Kind of tired. I should have taken a nap, and I did not. But I'm not sure that I've ever actually seen. I've been to zoos, of course. We all have. I've seen the big old Galapagos type turtles. I don't know, but not the sea turtles. I remember the big walking turtles. I remember being there with a lady I was dating, and we watched a turtle, and he was trying to escape. He was trying to push his way through the fence. And the handler came over, and he said one of them actually did get out of the fence once, and they had to put out over the loudspeaker that an animal had escaped. Of course, everybody freaked out, you know, thinking, you know, it's a tiger or something. You know, it was a turtle. Something that probably is not much danger to you unless you, like, actively try to get in its way. I mean, it's pretty easy to evade a turtle, I think. I'm sure if you stuck your hand in his mouth, it could do some damage, but you'd have to give him that opportunity. Interestingly, the handler also told us that the turtles were stick-trained, which meant they put out a colored stick, and they knew that meant to come to the shelter for their dinner. And I would not have guessed that a reptile could be trained in that way, but definitely they can. And this reinforces my opinion that the reptiles are plotting. They're plotting against us. That's why they're so chill. They're biding their time. They're waiting. And then one day they will rise, and the reptiles will rule us. It will happen. Write it down. Man, what a strange, strange turn this show has taken. More like Mark the Rabbit Hole. I don't have the sounds available to me. He has a variety of strange sound effects, which I could access if I had the soundboard up. But I don't, so I'm just going to have to talk. And desperately trying to remember one of the things that I really wanted to talk. I didn't have anything I strongly wanted to talk about tonight. That's the thing. That's why I'm not. That's why I'm not remembering them, is because, you know, I just thought of some random things, but they weren't really terribly interesting to me. And then when the show started, I kind of latched onto something different, and now here I am. Here's one. I've just remembered it because I've seen the reminder here at my feet. Here, I'm going to clear my throat. One second. Okay. For a long time, did I just say fur? For a long time, I was taking fish oil pills. If you're familiar with them, you can see them at the pharmacy along with the vitamins. They usually come in a green bottle, and they're for cholesterol. And you usually get like 3 months' supply in a bottle, and they cost $16. Fairly pricey. So I tend to take them at times when I'm making a little bit of money, and when I'm times when I'm poor like I am now, I generally don't take them. But anyway, they're little yellow pills, and they look kind of like chewables, little gummies. But don't try and chew them because they're fish oil. Take them every day, and then when I'm out, I'm out. But I usually just shake them out into my hand, and then I put them in my little pill box, with my other compounds that I take. And they're not really, the bottle's designed to give you these things about, one or two at a time, not seven at a time like you need for your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday pill box. So I'm shaking this thing like a madman, and what happened often was one of the pills would miss my hand or fall out of my hand, and sometimes I could recover them on the floor, and other times they rolled under various pieces of furniture and I couldn't recover them. So what's been happening today is I've been getting ready to move some of my furniture around, and I've been discovering these fish oil pills that have rolled under the furniture over the past several months that I've been sort of in residence here. And, of course, you can't take them now because you don't know what's been crawling over them since they've been down there. But there's one under the desk now, which I hadn't seen. I'm not exactly sure how it got there because it's right out there in plain sight. I spotted it just before I went on the air. And I can't quite reach it. I'm going to have to crawl under the desk to retrieve it as soon as we're done here. And that's really it. That's really all there is to tell about that. Just the fish oil, I guess. I was thinking, that's what it was. I was thinking that I could take like my notebook and make sort of a notes on where I'd found each of the individual fish oil tablets. And then connect the dots and see if any interesting shapes came out of it, like the crop circle people do. And maybe, and then I could show it to Mark, and maybe Mark could tell me something about it, if there's significance in the pattern in which these fish oil tablets had. The possibilities are endless. I mean, as Iggy once did a reading for me with napkins, so I'm quite sure that anything we found that's absorbed my energy over a period of time probably has a lot of very revealing information to give about me if I were to investigate it in an appropriate way. You know what? I'm just going to use my foot to get it. Hold on. As you notice, I don't multitask well. Now it's stuck to the bottom of your foot. Hold on. Where is it? What the hell? It's hard to spot it because it's the same color as the carpet. Okay, I have retrieved it, and now I'm going to toss it into the wastebasket, and we're done. Now, another episode of my life completed. Fish oil. Who told me I should take fish oil? Probably some doctor somewhere told me that, because he or she was unhappy with my cholesterol levels. And they told me you should take fish oil, so I did. Kind of the thing we do. Doctor tells us to do something, and we do it. I'm not saying that we shouldn't. I'm saying that the sort of automatic, reflexive nature of it can be distressing, at least to me, if you think about it. I have a doctor now who sort of asks me things more than telling me things. And I find I enjoy that a lot, and I don't want to give him up. He's back in my big city. And I'll probably be seeing him in about another month. And he did, it's very cool because I'd had a lot of trouble with the people I've seen before who were very much, they were trying to get me to start doing sugar checks. And I'm terrified of the needle, and I realize it's a tiny needle. But I just, prick my finger four times a day for the rest of my life. I can't wrap my brain around that, especially when I'm not having any symptoms of diabetes. But anyway, he's been more one to say, well, do you want to try, you want to maybe get a little training on it, that sort of thing. And I appreciate that, even if I haven't actually done any of the things he suggested. He was also very cool when I needed to get my my STD tests. Can't remember whether I told it. I'm pretty sure I told this story on the air before. I don't think this is a secret, but I had had a brush with destiny. Ooh, that didn't sound right. I had sex is what happened. And the person was a very casual acquaintance, and with a questionable sex and drug history. And so this put me in a position, okay, now I have to go. How do I even do this? I've never done it before. Well, he was very, very, my doctor, meaning, was very helpful, guided me in the direction I needed to go, wasn't judgmental in any way, and everything came out okay. But, I've had a number of very good experiences with him when I've had, you know, things worried me quite a bit. He was able to diffuse that worry, and I think that's probably the biggest thing a doctor can do, is just not tell you everything's going to be all right, because of course nobody can predict whether everything's going to be all right or not, but to relieve the patient's anxiousness, or at least reduce it to a point where the patient can make intelligent choices. So I'm going to see him again, and he'll try and get me to do sugar testing, and I won't, and he'll probably try and get me to get a flu shot, and I probably won't, although in February I'm going to be 50, and that's the time you're supposed to start getting. I mean, every other, it seems like you're trying to push everybody to get flu shots, and flu shots are a big business, and so when everybody's pushing you to get flu shots, I have to be very, very sort of careful about that. To say, I am going to be an old guy officially in February. I will be in the official risk group. It might be time for me to actually consider having that. And my friends are going nuts right now. No, don't do that. Don't take a flu shot. You'll die. I don't know. Seems like a lot of people take it and then they don't die. But you don't know about the cumulative effect either of people taking flu shots every year, year after year after year after year. And it does concern me the way an immunization works, that it's you're sort of artificially commandeering your immune system, forcing it to produce antibodies for just one thing. I'm hesitant about immunizations for small children, especially the number that they're given. I believe I read somewhere that's like over 50 in their first 2 years kids are given. Just seems like a lot of tampering with a small child's system, and then we wonder why things go wrong. Seems, you know, I'm not saying don't immunize. I'm saying it's probably a more sane way to do it, reasonable way to do it. Do we have to immunize as much? Does it all have to be in the first 2 years and so forth and so on? But I'm not qualified to opine on that because I'm not a doctor. Well, most doctors are fairly reasonable people, so where does all this stuff come from? I think it's got to come from the people who are making money off of it, doesn't it? I think so. Don't you? Okay. Well, anyway, coming to the end of the show, and once again, if you could go to mudtoesasquatch@gmail.com or the Mudtoe Sasquatch Facebook page, just let me know what you think of this sort of meandering stream of consciousness that was tonight's show. I'd appreciate it. I like getting your feedback, good and bad. And that's it. Thank you very much, and I wish you a pleasant good evening.